Hi, this is Laura, and today I'm speaking with Terry Doherty, the executive editor of The Reading Tub, which is a children's book review site at thereadingtub.com. This site is really designed to be a tool for parents and other adults who choose books for the kids in their lives. The reviews are broken into several age categories, as well as subjects such as books for remedial readers, reluctant readers, foreign language, and adoption books. And what I like about the reviews themselves is that they not only give a summary of the story, but they tell you when the book would be appropriate to read, such as if this is a great bedtime story or if it's great for family reading time, and what the educational themes might be, whether you should buy the book or borrow it from the library, and other similar books your child might enjoy. The reviews also include reactions from several children who have either read the story themselves or been read to. The Reading Tub site also has useful articles and links for parents if their children are learning to read or struggling to read, and has other reading activities as well. So, Terry, clearly this is a labor of love for you, and I appreciate your taking the time to answer some questions about what you do both in the Children's Book Insider newsletter and also here at the Clubhouse. So thanks for being here today.
I am really happy to be here today. Thanks for asking me.
Mm-hmm. It seems that many, or actually from the little informal survey I took, most of your reviews are of books that are published by smaller or lesser known presses. Do you also review self-published books? And if so, do you have any requirements, such as the book be widely available in chain stores or on Amazon.com or any place like that?
We actually have a fair number of books from self-published authors. Now, I'm not including people who start a company to publish their own work. I'm just talking about, you know, Author House, Source Books, Publish America, Trafford, Ex Libris, Book Search, all of those. It's about 5% of our book bag, which I guess doesn't sound like a lot, but to me that's a pretty good indicator. We like self-published books, and there's some really great authors that we've discovered who are self-published. But for us, the goal isn't really selling books. So it's about encouraging families to read together. So if someone borrows a book, that's great. But in the last 2 years, what I've done is added a criterion that says books must be available through an established, recognized bookseller. It doesn't have to be Amazon. It can be something else. But even though it doesn't matter to me, and I can understand why authors want to control the process, the people who visit our site and choose to buy a book want the confidence of dealing with a known commodity. A lot of times they're new parents or grandparents, and I'm an online consumer myself, so I can understand people being leery of shopping in a place that they don't know. And there's just too many horror stories and scams out there about people having their money taken and that kind of stuff. I can't risk the Reading Tub's good work on that. So we do require a major bookseller.
Well, and that makes perfect sense. And actually, these days, it's so easy for a self-published author to get their book carried somewhere like Amazon that there's really no reason not to have it available like that. And it certainly makes it easier for the people who want to buy your book to get it. So I would think that that would be something that every author would want to do anyway.
I think so. And I'm finding fewer self-published books that come in that aren't available on Amazon or Barnes & Noble. On the adoption side, we use Tapestry. So that's those are all recognized, well-established. And those kind of places give the reader the option of sending it back. You know, authors don't like returns, but the consumer side of it says, you know what, if it doesn't work for me, then I want to have that fail-safe, and Amazon gives them that little bit of insurance, or whomever.
All the reviews on your site include input from kids. And I wondered if the kids ever disagree with the adult on the quality of a book, and if so, whose opinion carries the most weight in the review? Do you have any sort of parameters in place for that sort of thing?
Well, actually, a lot of times, the kids and adults don't agree. And sometimes it's the adults that don't agree. I mean, I could think of a couple books that my daughter loves, and I really like, and my husband rolls his eyes every time she picks it off the shelf. When I write the profile, I want the review to show both opinions equally. I want what the child's perspective of the story was. You know, did they sit still? Were they wiggly? Or did they absolutely love it? And here's why. We try to pick out specific things that they liked about the book. And the same thing goes for the adult. Because the person reading the review knows their tastes and the taste of their child better than we do. So if I offer a balanced statement, they can shift the weight to what's important to them. You know, it may not matter to them that they may not like the humor. And humor is the most difficult one to nail, because what's funny to me may not be funny to you. And that's really why I want to be careful about making sure both of them carry about a 50-50 weight.
Mm-hmm. I was going to ask you how you find kids to help with the reviews. Are they your own children? Do you have neighbor children help you? How do you recruit these children?
Generally, with books for younger audiences, they're shared within a family. We've had a number of librarians write reviews based on books that they have shared at story time. And those are fairly easy. Particularly young families or parents of kids in elementary school, we get a lot of volunteers. We can always use more, but we have a lot of folks that, you know, write to us on the site and said, I'd love to volunteer to review books. Or folks that just want to get started in the process. They want to write reviews someday, but they just want to dabble for now, and we're an opportunity to do that and have a give back for the community. With the transitional and independent readers, it's a little bit harder to do in a family situation. We've got a longtime partnership with an organization called Be the Star You Are, and it's a nonprofit that uses literacy to empower at-risk youth. And Cynthia Bryan, who founded and runs the organization, created a star book review team just for us. And what they do is, in the after-school center, there is a group of kids, and they have to apply to be part of the team so that they're vetted. We send books for the 8 to 13 audience out to the team. The team reads them and reviews them. We post their review on the site, and then we have the Be the Star You Are logo on that review so that they have sort of the ego boost of knowing it came from them. They're not totally anonymous. And then we also have a program called Use Your ABCs, where we partner with schools, usually Title I, but not always. And these are the teachers that are working with kids failing their reading benchmarks. So these could be high school students that are still reading at a mid-elementary level, like 4th, 5th, or 6th grade, sometimes 7th grade. And what we do is we collect the books that match the reading dynamics of that classroom, send them the books. The kids read their books, write the reviews, so they get practice at reading, they get practice at comprehension, they get practice with writing, and then they send us the reviews, and we publish them, and we do the same thing. We put their school mascot or logo right there on the book review. And I've always told the teachers, you know, we won't put names on the reviews because they're minors. But anyone who wants to have a letter of recommendation or a letter attached to a college application to say, yes, this person did in fact write a review that was published at the Reading Tub, I'm happy to do that.
Well, and it just occurred to me as you were talking that this is actually a really great resource for authors who are working on a book, and say they find a review of a book that's in the same genre as something they're writing. They can read the review and see the actual children's comments on the book and get a sense of what kids liked or didn't like about a book that might be somewhat similar to theirs. And it might be an interesting educational activity for writers to do as well, because writers don't usually get a lot of kid input on their books, especially during the process. So I think that's great.
Well, and that's particularly true with the independent readers, you know, the kids that are in third grade and up, because, and particularly the middle school students and high school students, because they'll say, I loved this book because it was just like X, and we'll include X in their comments. So they'll have, you can get a sense of, okay, these are the read-alikes that they're thinking about as they're looking at books. So if they like this kind, then this is, you know, if they liked, you know, Sally Smith solves, you know, the mystery of the stolen TV, then you know that they're, and they can name the elements of the story that they like. That is helpful to a writer. Says, I want to make sure I think about these things as I'm putting together that plot.
Definitely, definitely. How long does it take to review a book for the Reading Tub? And I wondered if you would ever not review something because it was published too long ago. Does something have to be published within a certain amount of time?
No, there's never a book that's too old, because it could still be new to us. So there's no age restrictions on that. We read every book that we receive. And I was an editor at a small publishing company at one time, and part of my job was writing a detailed letter back, not a, sorry, we're not accepting your manuscript, but I had to offer a detailed assessment of why, make suggestions. So I always have approached reading and reviewing with every book has at least one positive. Sometimes the most positive is the author's intention, which didn't unfortunately come through in the finished product, but there's always a positive. That said, the quality of the writing is huge for me. You know, I'm an English major, I'm a reading fanatic, I'm a former book editor, and, you know, if the goal is to engage kids, then we need to model what we expect of them in the quality of the writing. So there are some books that I haven't reviewed because, you know, it didn't, you know, we can't give kids books, you know, with 5 and 6 and 8 typos on a page. It doesn't fit our model.
Have you ever not reviewed a book because you felt the topic was not appropriate for kids or for the age group of kids that it was written for?
We've reviewed books that for me are personally uncomfortable, but that doesn't really play into the decision. You know, I know that books about stranger danger are important, for example. Do I like talking to my 7-year-old about predators? No. Do I need to help her understand safety? Yes. You know, I can place a book about stranger danger because there are other parents probably thinking the same thing. But a book for kids about recognizing child sexual assault, well, that's a little bit difficult to place. And because we read every book with a child, I've got to take some of that into consideration. That said, we have reviewed books that have sensitive subjects, you know, but they may be targeted at the wrong audience, and we'll say that in the review. You know, this book is an excellent opportunity to discuss, you know, the subject of abandonment, let's say. I mean, that's not particularly sensitive, but it's an example, with your children. You know, the book is apparently geared to 5 to 8, but the content level and the level of detail is really more for the older reader. And in fact, yesterday I read a very interesting item. Natasha Maul had a really interesting post at her Maul Books blog about whether books can put ideas into kids' heads. And she used the example of her son's sudden fear of the dark. He had never expressed any, 4 years old, had never expressed any fear of the dark, monsters, or anything like that. They read some books in preparation of going on a camping trip, and then all of a sudden, he's now afraid of monsters in the dark. So, you know, she gave me some food for thought about, you know, how I do place books. Do I place a book that talks about monsters in the dark with a kid who doesn't already fear the dark? So it was an interesting, something I need to think about.
Mm-hmm. It is an interesting idea, and that's worth exploring further. And I think a lot of it depends too on the age of the child. I think a 10-year-old has a different perspective on what a monster in the dark might be, even if they've never thought of it before, than a six-year-old might. So, and as you said, the parent best knows the child and needs to make the ultimate decision there on whether the child's ready for this book or not. Since you read so many books and you get, do you have a sense of number-wise how many books you get a month, say, to review, like that are just sent to you?
Yep, we get on average 40 books a month. And those are unsolicited reviews. We don't go out and ask for books to review. And those are actually, we're not accepting, since last fall, we stopped accepting books from authors who we've never worked with before or whose publisher we've never worked with before, because we were getting about 75 a month. And that's just too many to try to place. These are just basically automatic receipts from publishers or authors that we've worked with or publishers that we've worked with. You know, if you're publishing through Author House, even though we may not know you, we know your publisher. So yes, we'll happily accept your book.
Okay. So you get a lot of books and you read a lot of books a year. And I wondered if you had noticed any sort of just general trends in the last couple of years on, you know, are there topics that you see over and over that you think, oh God, I can't read another book about this? and conversely, are there any areas where you think there needs to be a book and you haven't read one and maybe someone should think about writing it?
I mean, one of the trends for me is preachy books. You know, I don't like people talking at me, and I don't think kids want to be talked that way in the books either. So, you know, not every book has to have a vitamin, as they call it, a vital message. But when it does, it should be woven into the story, not beaten like a drum, you know, repetitively over somebody's head.
And do you notice that in across all age groups, or is that generally more for the younger kids?
It's usually more for the younger kids, up to sometimes up to fourth grade. You know, and a more text heavy picture book can be like that. They're stacking up because a number of our reviewers have said, "Would you please stop sending me whatever somebody thinks is the next Harry Potter." You know, they've had enough of the fantasy piece, the magic piece. And that they're, you know, it's, they've had, you know, I try to mix up as much as I can, but in that middle grade novel, young adult, there's still tons in the fantasy magic. You know, there's only so many ways to write the story. So that would be one. In terms of things that I'd like to see, for me, and I don't know how you convey this as an author. One of the important things for me, because I have a daughter who is autistic, and she's a sensory seeker, which means she's always looking for that sensory input. She's the one that touches every trash can, that picks up every little gum wrapper on the ground, you know, will jump off the monkey bars just to see how it feels. And she loves to read, but she bores very quickly with stories, even picture books, that are character-driven, you know, that go through what the person thinks or how they're looking at something. So for her, you know, and she's, I mean, one in every child is autistic. One in every 100 children, excuse me, is autistic. It's the sensory language. You know, the snow was cold, like the ice cube in the freezer, or those kinds of things that add depth, or lots of events. You know, she likes the mystery. She likes the adventures where somebody's going from this event to that event. But a lot of that sensory piece, you know, would be very helpful.
Well, and that, yeah, and that ties in exactly with what we often tell people, show, don't tell. You're using those sensory details So the child can actually experience the story. They plug in their own sensory experiences. Oh, I've held an ice cube, so I know what the snow feels because I remember, even if they've never seen snow, if you say it's as cold as an ice cube, they get that. And then the plot, the action. And so it sounds like what your daughter, the stories your daughter likes is actually the kinds of things that a lot of kids in the picture book age are craving as well, because it involves them very closely with the book, as opposed to just having lots of thoughts and feelings and an internal story. They need that external action and sensory detail.
But even with illustrated chapter books, a lot of times I'll see the illustration will be very specific. It'll be somebody jumping off a desk at school. But the page that it accompanies, half the page is dedicated to describing the picture. So it, she's like, okay, Mom, I already see it. I already see it. So, it's somehow there's got to be a balance. If you're going to use the illustrations, let the illustrations do some of the storytelling for you.
That's a great food for thought for some of our authors and illustrators out there. And I think also, as the high-low books become more widespread, I'm seeing a lot of that type of thing as well in the high-interest, lower reading level books, where the pictures do enhance the text. The text isn't just describing what's in the picture, and they are more action-based stories. So I think that also might feed into some of what you're talking about. But I understand what you're saying. In general, it would be nice to see some more of this in the books that you see. So that's great advice.
Now, is one of the tips that you guys offer having authors run their manuscript through a readability program? For example, when we get books, I run an excerpt through. There's several online readability programs that'll tell you the reading level, and I have found it very interesting to see, picture books with very simple stories, and targeted at that 4 to 6, 4 to 8 age group. Written at a 10th grade level. So, that may be helpful for authors to sort of say, okay, where is there, does it flow well both for the audience and the reader, or is there a disconnect? Because the 10-year-old isn't going to want to read about shapes and colors anymore. But the book is so detailed that it's too advanced for that 4-year-old.
Do you know the names of some of those programs that you use?
Yeah, actually, if you do it in Microsoft Word, you type in 100 words, or you paste in your 100 words. I usually start at the beginning of the book and go to the first 100, but you can, particularly with chapter books, you want to go to a couple different spots, and you hit spelling and grammar check, and you make sure the grammar check is checked. And when it finishes, there's a little box at the end that will tell you what the Flesch Kincaid readability is. And then I have one that I used. Let's see, I'm pulling it up. It's called addedbytes.com, BYTES.com, /tools/readability score. And you paste whatever it is you've got in there, and it will actually come back with 5 or 6 different reading systems. They'll come back with Pinellas, they'll come back with Gunning Fog, and then they'll give you an average across all of those systems. So that I found that helpful.
That's wonderful. Thank you. Okay, well, Terry, thanks. This has been a great interview, very, very informative, and thanks for doing what you're doing. You're performing a wonderful service out there, and I hope that you continue to do it and continue to get some great books to review. So,
Well, I hope your
thanks
authors
a
send
lot.
us some great books. We'd love to read them.
Yes. Well, everybody should go to thereadingtub.com and check it out. And if you are published by a publisher who has been reviewed before by the Reading Tub, then you can submit your book for review if you're a new author. So, terrific. Okay, well, thanks a lot.
Thank you, Laura.